Have you registered for the upcoming live summit in London yet? If not, what are you waiting for? Imagine spending 2 days in person sharing ideas with the very people you've heard on this podcast. The tactics, strategies, and actionable insights that you'll take away are incredible. One of our repeat guests and Pinnacle Society members, Rich Rosen, attended a previous live summit, and he told us that he added $100,000 in additional revenue within just 45 days of attending from one strategy that he took away. Now, keep in mind, it was a strategy he was already aware of, and he knew he should be doing it. He just wasn't doing it. Have you ever been there? Can you relate to that? What made the difference was getting a detailed playbook he could implement, plus hearing from multiple recruitment business owners who had already successfully implemented that same strategy. That's what tipped him over the edge into action. If this sounds like something you could benefit from, then visit recruitmentcoach.com/summit. How would you like to meet me in person in London, England? That's the location of our upcoming live summit on September 17th and 18th, and I would love you to come along. If you're in the UK, it's an absolute no-brainer. Even if you're not based in the UK, you should do everything you can to get yourself here. The content and the networking will make the trip worthwhile. Plus, London is an incredible city. It consistently ranks as one of the top tourist destinations in the world. In fact, we already have people flying in for this event from all over the US and Europe. Some are bringing their spouse and turning it into a mini vacation. Others are using this as an opportunity to visit family or to meet their UK customers. Seriously, you should consider joining us. Check out the speaker lineup and the highlight videos at recruitmentcoach.com/summit.
My suggestion is if you're interviewing, say, like 10 people, out of the 10, there's two people that you really, really like and you're on the fence, you don't know what to do. My suggestion is hire both of them. Find Absolutely. A way to bring them both on at the same time, because if one of them doesn't work out, you still got a really good one, you know, in your corner.
Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Whitby, and today we're joined by Brian Cabay.
The one thing when you're out on your own, you can't rely on anyone. You can't like, all right, well, if I'm having a bad month, all right, it's fine. I have all the resources. I have the support. You are literally on your own.
Brian is the founder of Brian Simon Associates, or BSA, and they are a boutique recruiting firm specializing in public relations and marketing.
I also, you know, reached out to every candidate that I ever worked with and kind of told them what's going on, because some people don't really think about it as like, you know, new business, right? Candidates that you build a strong relationship with, especially the ones that maybe you placed in the past or whatever, maybe they have moved since, they know you. There's a trust that's already built. So building and reconnecting every single day, I had a goal that I will establish one, a new connection and reconnect with someone.
Since launching BSA in 2016, Brian has partnered with some of the most recognized PR agencies and brands across the country. In fact, Brian was named one of the top PR recruiters in the United States by Business Insider. Earlier this year, Brian launched a tech company called Arrange, which is an AI scheduling tool designed specifically for recruiters to coordinate meetings between multiple external parties, for example, clients and candidates.
We were doing high volume scheduling of interviews. For me as a recruiter and my team, I've noticed that maybe over 70% of our time was administrative tasks, scheduling interviews. I'm talking about the coordination process, being the middle person, coordinating an interview between a client and a candidate. 90%+ of recruiters, including myself, we would do it the manual way. Hey, candidate. Hey, client. When are you free? Oh, I'm free tomorrow at 3:00. Oh, I can't do tomorrow at 3:00. Can they do next week? And you're going back and forth. And I've realized that scheduling an interview sometimes took days. And now multiply that by 30 interviews a week.
Today, Arrange has already been adopted by recruiting teams as a smarter way to schedule interviews and save valuable time. You can learn more about that at arrangeai.io. Brian, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so, so much for the warm intro. And thank you so much for having me, Mark. Really appreciate it. Excited
Pleasure.
To be here.
So you launched your own firm in 2016. Rewind just a bit and tell me, how did you get into recruiting originally?
Yeah, no, great question. So when I, after I graduated college, I obviously, like most recent college grads, did not know what I wanted to do with my life. I was leaving the party mode and now I'm in the real world and I'm like, what do I do now? So I had a few jobs before I got into recruiting. Sold life insurance for a year. I sold, then I got into like ad sales for another year. Couldn't really find my place in life, honestly. I knew that I loved helping people, talking to people. So I met with a recruiter one day and they kind of like guided me like, hey, maybe you should, you know, explore recruiting. I applied cold to a LinkedIn ad and I'm like, let's see what this is all about. I got a call the next day. I had a follow-up interview and the rest is history. I just fell into it, honestly.
Yeah. And there you go.
Yeah.
I've heard variations of that story many times, as you can imagine. So awesome. And then, so you launched your own firm in 2016.
Yep.
And why did you specialize in PR and marketing specifically?
So that job posting that I applied to happened to be a recruiting agency that did a lot of PR, marketing, advertising, recruitment. So I kind of fell into it. I, you know, I dabbled a little bit of advertising, a little bit of marketing, a little bit of PR. PR was, I was just drawn to it. I really enjoyed the people that I was, you know, recruiting and the clients that I was working with at the time. And after about a year and a half being at that agency, I left and went to a larger recruiting agency. And there I launched a PR recruitment desk. They didn't do any PR recruiting. I was kind of like the lead on the PR side. I brought in a lot of clients. I was doing really well. They hired a team under me. Things were really booming at the time. And after about two and a half, three years, I had this itch to just do this and go out on my own and build something special. I kind of, the agency that I worked for was a little bit, you know, they were great. And I really appreciate the opportunity, but a little bit of a, you know, old school mentality when it comes to, you know, recruiting, a lot of cold calling initiatives and stuff like that. And, you know, the PR world was very much, you know, we're recruiting from these small agencies. So if you're cold calling them, especially during business hours, can get a little dicey. You know, you're calling Michelle and I want to speak to Rachel. So I had this different mindset at the time. And, you know, I left. I was 27 years old. I was living with two of my roommates at the time. I was kind of sick and tired of living in this small box of a room, and I wanted just to better my life, you know, in a lot of ways. And I felt that I would find that if I just took this leap of faith, and I did it. And it was really hard in the beginning. A lot went on in the beginning. It was really tough.
I think I was, so you're, we, I was a similar age when I started my business. I think, so you were 27 when you launched your own firm.
Yeah.
I was 28. So there you go.
If I saw you at the time, I would have given you a big high five, man.
Yeah,
like, hey, we're doing this. We're doing this.
Absolutely. It's like, scary, exciting, kind of all kinds of emotions rolled into one, but
everything. Everything.
I totally get that. So, but then, so this is the first big story of the of this episode, which is that shortly after you launched your own agency, you actually pressed pause on everything and entered a reality TV show. So, tell that's like that's definitely original. Your story of getting into recruiting was not original. I've heard that. I have never heard this story, Brian. So how did that happen? Tell me about that.
So there's a really exciting element to it and a little bit of a twisted, sad element to it. So it kind of goes both ways. So at the time, my father, you know, while I was actually, before I started BSA, my father was diagnosed with kidney failure. And he was on dialysis treatment for about 3 years. So, you know, while I was recruiting for PR, I was also recruiting to find him a kidney donor. I wasn't a blood match for my father. Neither were my sisters. He's type O. So just to spread some awareness, if you're type O, you can only receive from type O if your blood type's O. So it's a universal. And if you're not O, you can't donate to O. So that's kind of how it works. And I searched and searched for a kidney donor. Took 3 years. I found this angel of a person. Shout out to Jennifer Wolf from Atlanta, Georgia. She's amazing. She's like a sister to me. And she responded to my outreach note, just like how we would do it on LinkedIn and recruiting. And long story short, she donated her kidney to my dad. She saved his life. After the donation, about a year later, I was approached by Fox. They found my story. I did actually create a YouTube video documenting the whole donation, finding Jennifer and all that. And they somehow found the YouTube video. And they approached me and they said, hey, you know, we're filming a reality TV show and the premise is 11 contestants competing to win a dream home for their heroes. And we're filming in Atlanta and ideally your hero would be based in Atlanta. And it just was a perfect fit for the show. And they were filming right when I started BSA. So I had to make a decision. I first said no, honestly, because they didn't give me details. I didn't know anything about the show. I didn't know, like, I just knew that I would have to be gone for months. And it was an unbelievable experience. I took that another leap of faith. I had someone helping me with the business at the time, someone that I trusted. So I kind of left completely. She ran like the show while I was gone. I had to give away my cell phone. I couldn't have a computer. They cut the cord on our TV as well because they were filming promo sneak peeks on the show and we weren't allowed to know what was going on at the time.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah. It was insane. So I was gone for a few months, but Mark, long, long story, experience short. I ended up winning her a home on national television and it was my way to give back to my hero who donated her kidney to my dad. How do you repay her? Honestly, this is just like an ounce of what you can give to this person, a complete stranger to do such a selfless act of kindness is absolutely incredible. And yeah, that's a little bit of a story.
An incredible story.
Yeah.
Like, wow. It's like, on so many levels, that's incredible. Like, it's incredible what she did, right?
Incredible.
Then it's incredible that you switched off you didn't switch it off. It was still going, your colleague or your, you know,
it was going at 50%. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
It wasn't going at full speed.
But when you had only just launched a business and like that takes, I mean, just launching a business, as I'm sure others can relate to who might be listening, like it's such a leap of faith and you've got so much on the line and then, you know, and you're so keyed up, like you're like committing everything you've got to this, but then to like interrupt that and then switch gears and go over here to this kind of insane idea of like, it's a reality show where you might win a house for this, you know, person. Wow. What did you, like, without telling the whole show, like briefly, what was the premise? What did you have to do to compete on the show?
Every day we had different challenges of, you know, building homes and, you know, whether it's building a whole fence or kind of painting a side, or it was just small mini challenges, hammering. If you ever watch the show, it's Home Free Season 2. If you're a football fan, it was hosted by Tim Tebow, legendary college football player, as well as Mike Holmes, very big in Canada in the Canadian market of home improvement. Two great guys, a little bit intimidating on the show. But it was, you know, just many challenges and it was just really competitive, but also very heartwarming, you know, as well. We're all, each of the contestants had a really great, amazing story. And they all have a, you know, a hero in their lives. And, you know, we were on set 4 days and then we were in a hotel room for 2 days by ourselves when we weren't filming with all the TV cords cut. I was doing a lot of coloring and a lot of reading and a lot of push-ups. I'll tell you that.
Wow. That's insane. Because that's the other side of it is you had to like really it's not just interrupting your business, it's interrupting your whole life and like whole almost life. Disconnecting.
Yeah.
But also the weird thing with that, like most reality formats where it's competitive like this and people get knocked out or there's only one winner, like if you're just doing it for your own benefit, it's, you know, it. Whereas in this case, everybody had a good reason why they should win, right? So it kind of, yeah, that must have just been quite an intense experience.
Intense, you know, being away from, you know, family or, you know, friends, just the real world for quite a long time was pretty wild too. So it's, but you know what? I don't regret it for a second. It was such an amazing experience. And, you know, it kind of also helped me when I came back with my business too, because, you know, I would tell people, hey, if the biggest placement I have ever made in life was finding a stranger to donate her kidney to my dad, I can help you find your next, you know, account manager or VP.
Absolutely.
Or
that seems like easy that. By comparison, right?
Yeah.
Wow. And so how long was that process before you could get back to business?
Getting back. Yeah. I mean, so it was a few months, I would say about 3 months long. And then, yeah. And then coming back was really kind of, you know, taking a breather, following up with all your contacts and, you know, clients and everything. And when starting your own recruiting firm, you know, you don't have a income really. So it's kind of like, and that's what you said, Mark, before, it's kind of like scary because you are, you know, giving away your stability, you know, you're saying bye to stability and taking a risk, a chance in yourself to create is a keyword, a future that will be extremely, you know, fulfilling in the long run. So
right.
you're gambling on yourself for the
most
part.
That's a good way of putting it. Absolutely. There's a short-term sacrifice. You know, you're walking away from a reliable income to an uncertain income in the hope. I mean, you're kind of backing yourself in the hope that ultimately you're going to be better off in terms of financially, emotionally, you know, in you know, all different ways. So what, from that experience of being on that show, was there anything, I mean, apart from it's a great story and it obviously you had a positive impact for the lady who donated her kidney to your dad, but was there anything you could take away from that experience that actually you could put into or helped you be better at running your business?
No pun intended, resilience, honestly. That experience really taught me what failure is, because I know it sounds so great, you know, we're fast forward in life right now and talking about this, but it took 3 years of failure, of talking to people that wanted money, that there was a lot of kidney donation and everything. There's a lot of, it's a whole like dark world out there. What's going on? You know, I've seen it, you know, firsthand. So it's a lot of like, you know what, you know, my dad's life is on the line, you know, this can turn out to be really, really bad, and being resilient, not stopping, you know, taking daily failure and turning it into a positive somehow, keep going, really helped me with my business 100%. I mean, that really, especially when you're starting off, talk about a side experience that what you're going through on a personal level, really, you know, here I am now, you know, do I stop this and maybe get another job that whatever? It really taught me a lot in life, personally and professionally, and made me, seriously, not to like sound corny or anything, it really made me the person I am today from that experience.
I can imagine. Wow. That's, yeah, absolutely. Some just so many dimensions to that. But ultimately, it's like the emotional journey that you've gone on, not just the practical like process that you had to go through to find that donor. So look, it's been 9 years now that you've been running your own business. But you started, was it just you and one other person? Or like what were the early days like once you finally got back to business that first year or so?
So I had someone that I actually worked with at my first recruiting job. She then also joined me on my second recruiting job. And when I started my own business, she was kind of like in the point of like freelancing and everything. So I brought her on to kind of help out more like, you know, in the beginning, the beginning phase to, you know, sourcing candidates, some client management. She really was a big help at the time. So that was the early stages. She wasn't like a, you know, full time, but more of like a, here, I'm here if you need any support kind of part-time, on a part-time basis. So that was really helpful, especially when I went on the show in the beginning, have someone on my corner.
Talk to me about like that first, you're back from the show and you're like, okay, now I need to make this really work because I've, you know, I've bet my future on this. What did you do to sort of get the business going?
Yeah, I basically was a LinkedIn networking machine. I went bananas, Mark. I really did. I reached out to everyone that I know that I've ever connected with in the past. I built really strong relationships throughout the years before I started my own firm. So I kind of was getting really well connected, especially in that PR space. I'm starting my own firm. This is what I'm doing. You know, would love to connect and work with you. I also, you know, reached out to every candidate that I ever worked with and kind of told them what's going on, because candidates, some people don't really think about it as like, you know, new business, right? Candidates that you build a strong relationship with, especially the ones that maybe you placed in the past or whatever, maybe they have moved since. Hey, what's going on? How are you? You know, if you guys ever need any support, you know, I'm here. They know you. There's a trust that's already built. So building and reconnecting, every single day, I had a goal that I will establish one, a new connection, you know, and reconnect with someone, you know, on a ongoing basis, and just keeping in touch and just being a resilient recruiter.
Awesome. So this daily goal, what it was, connect with one new person and then reconnect with someone who you already know.
Yes.
Okay. And when you say connect, what do you mean by that? Is that a conversation? Is that a meeting? Is that like what counts as
getting a call going, setting up some sort of call with a new connection, you know, like, hey, you know, obviously on LinkedIn, it's crazy. A lot of evolved, you know, the LinkedIn whole game, especially with AI now, it's pretty intense and everyone's trying to kind of do the same thing. So you really need to stand out. But getting to the point that you're building a rapport first and some trust going on, they kind of know you. I would never start a conversation saying, hey, I'm a recruiter. If you need any assistance, I saw you're hiring for XYZ. Well, those days are gone. It doesn't really work much anymore. You have to kind of be yourself first, show them who you are, and, you know, get a conversation going in a very, very, natural way, because people don't like, you know, they don't want like, you're just another person trying to sell me something. Got to bring value in other ways before you actually can offer what you actually, your services, you know?
Awesome. So with that LinkedIn philosophy, how did that play out?
Yeah. I mean, roller coaster ride, just like anything, you know, nothing is easy. Nothing. I don't care what you do, how good you are, how, you know, skilled you are, nothing is easy, right? Look at Michael Jordan, right? He's got cut from his basketball team. There's all the great people, all the goats in this world have all failed. So I failed so many times. I'm still failing today. And yeah, like every day, you know, every week you look back, all right, well, I had some wins, but I had a lot of failure. In my book, in my point of view, if you don't fail, you're never going to be successful.
You're not taking enough action.
Yes,
right?
Yes, exactly. There's not one person in this world that is so successful that never failed before. So yeah, failure is key to success.
Agreed. 100%. All right, great. So I want to go on to talk about like how you built your firm and you actually hired a team and everything. But first, like, because this is the thing, before you can hire a team, you actually need to, you know, generate invoices and get some cash in, right? So talk to me about the point where you were like, hey, this is actually working. We're in business. We're making placements. There's money in the bank. Like, when was that moment when you felt like, okay, I haven't, like, there's still ways to go, but I feel like this is viable and I'm proud of, like, I'm making this work.
Yeah, no, of course. It took some time to build up some more, you know, some receivables. I would say once I start getting back into it and get going, I would say probably like 5 to 6 months in, I made my first placement. It took some time. And then after you make your first one, the momentum starts kicking in and you're like, all right, I'm hot right now. I can keep going. And the next one. So I build up, I was losing money the first 6 months. I was not making anything. And then, you know, my first year, I would say I probably made like minimal, maybe like 4 placements at the time. And then, you know, I felt that shift. There were times, Mark, that I was at the point of stopping everything and going, you know, finding a stable recruitment job. I was never leaving the industry. I loved what I do. But the one thing when you're out on your own, you can't rely on anyone. You can't like, all right, well, if I'm having a bad month, all right, it's fine. I have all the resources. I have the support. You are literally on your own. That's why, Mark, your podcast and your platform is so amazing for recruiters, because even the ones that are working independently, they can come, they listen to your podcast, have a conversation, and you've built such a strong community of like-minded individuals that we can kind of, you know, talk to one another. And it gives us that support that we need, you know, definitely when you're working independently.
That's cool, Brian. I'm glad. Thank you so much for that feedback. And it's worth pointing out that although like a lot of our audience are business owners, a lot of just recruiters working in agencies or other search firms listen as well. And like, I think what I would say is if you want to start your own thing and that's what you're called to do, and you just have that, like that's a longstanding ambition, then absolutely go for it. But just be aware that's not the right path for everybody, right? And that, as you've just alluded to, it is super tough. And like, so you described that first 6 months till you made your first placement. What were you living on?
Nothing.
I mean, did you like save up a bunch in the bank from your last job?
I saved a little bit. Nothing astronomical. Some minimal, just to get me by. I saved enough to pay my rent at the time, which those rents don't exist anymore, especially in New York City. But at the time, I saved up rent for about 6 months. So that was like my cushion, my fluff to kind of like, all right, now I'm competing against myself, you versus you. I need to make a placement within 6 months. If I can't make a placement in 6 months, then maybe this is not for me, right? That's kind of like, that was like my mental.
Yes.
My mental, you need some sort of mental line there, because there's people that go at it for like years and years, but there, you got to have some sort of mental cutoff that you got to maybe reassess a little bit.
Definitely.
You know?
So it's funny because I tell people, when people ask me about launching a business, I tell them you need a cash cushion of 6 months living expenses. And that's exactly what you just described. But what was going through your mind during that first, like until you finally got that one across the line, like, there must have been days of self-doubt, like, what have I done? What is going on here? Tell me about those thoughts and feelings and how you got yourself to just keep moving forward.
One thing I want to address based to your question, but also kind of dive in a little bit deeper, because I think it's really important. People maybe sometimes fail to think like this. And from experience, I kind of learned a few things. If you're starting your own recruiting firm and you're leaving your current one, make sure you have a good, transparent conversation with your current employer about, hey, because look, at the end of the day, you know, people in recruiting, you know, are very big on, you know, what you own and what you don't own. You know what I mean? So it's really important to have these transparent conversations of like, hey, you know, I really want to do this. This is what I'm going to do. I really respect you guys. You know, they as long as you're very transparent and have a good conversation and tell them like, look, I'm not looking to like steal anything from you or anything like that. Even if these are connections that you made yourself and they didn't give you any of them and it all rooted from your efforts, it still was created while you were under someone else's umbrella. Yes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So doing so, I had a few instances when I left, there were some conversations back and forth. There were some hiccups there, but at the end of the day, you need to have these real transparent conversations because you don't want to do anything and then get in, you know, this whole legal thing after, and then you're really kind of like taking 10 steps backwards. You know what I mean? So for anyone that's thinking about doing this or anything, make sure you're transparent, leave on good terms, get to a point that they support your direction and what you're looking to do, and just do it the right way. Okay. That's my advice.
Agree 100% with that. Absolutely. Like if you have a non-compete or restrictive covenant, it's called in the UK, then, you know, unless you can get them to waive it, you need to stick to that. Now, the good thing is it forces you to get good at new business development, right? Because you've got that 6 or 12 month period or whatever, where you have to create new relationships. And then when you can revisit your old ones, then it's just going to get easier from there.
Correct. Absolutely. Just, yeah, do the right thing, and just be a good person, be kind, and just do things the right way, because if you don't, it'll come back to you later on in life.
Yeah, agreed. So, then you got to the point where you've made 4 placements. When was this? You gave that as a milestone.
Yeah. So, you know, about 5-6 months, I made my first one. And then after that, I would say end of the year, between 6 months to 12, you know, I made like three to four more. And that really kind of gave me that mental, you know, push that I needed. Hey, I can do this. You know, year two, I'm kind of going to go in and really kind of, you know, kick butt. So, you know, the first year was just building year, really kind of experiencing it, taking it all in and really kind of figuring it all out.
So then at what point did you decide to go from being a solo recruiter to building a firm?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say, so the first 3 years I actually worked independently. It was just myself, me, the coffee shops around me on the Upper West Side, loved it. And that was my office pretty much. I was the guy with the headphone and just like head down all day long. And then year three that I looked to hire someone, my first hire. I was getting busier. We were getting more, you know, demand for hiring, and there was so much I can do. You know what I mean? I can get the company to here, but the people around you will really help you get, you know, to where your vision, you know, when you first started this. So I hired my first employee at the time. Mark, I know you're going to probably think this is crazy, but every time something else happens, the day one of my first employee starting, I kid you not, the weekend before he started, I got injured and tore my ACL playing.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I was playing basketball. I tore my ACL. So I actually met him the first time in crutches. I was gearing up for surgery. Yeah. And then I had to put a pause. he started taking the ownership of things.
Oh no, that's terrible timing.
Yeah, I was out. I was out for some time because I was in recovery. I had to heal after surgery. Don't ask.
Oh my goodness. Did he last? Because that's not a great start to your new job.
Yeah. He was with me for a few years actually.
Okay.
He was with me for a few years and it was just wild times, man. It's like when something happens, something else happens. So nothing is rosy. It's never a perfect road.
It's never straightforward. There's always absolutely setbacks, things unexpected, you know, things coming up. Okay. So he was employee number one, but I just want to emphasize for listeners, because sometimes I interview people on the show and they're like huge billers and they're completely solo. They're like solo $1 million billers. But I almost worry that gives people a false impression, right? Because that is not normal. That's extremely unusual and unlikely. And the most surest way to get to seven figures is with a small team around you, right? Because number one person, there's only so many hours in the day. There's only so much time. One person can only achieve so much. And number two is, I can only speak for myself. I'm not good at everything. There's some things I'm pretty good at, and there's a lot of things that I suck at. And if it was just down to me, those limitations are really kind of impair your progress. And so I think if you really want to build a seven-figure recruiting firm, you need a support system around you. Even if you're the face of the business or you're the kind of primary fee earner, doing it alone is super tough. So what was your journey in actually starting to hire? But I'll tell you that the biggest reason people don't want to do it is because they're worried about giving up control. They're worried about quality, like going down. They think, oh, well, all the clients like dealing with me. I don't think they'd want to deal with someone else. Also, I do things a certain way. And I want to, you know, they have all these reasons or excuses, right, as to why somebody else is not, they couldn't delegate to someone else. Now, with that as a kind of backdrop, tell me about your journey of growing from one to, how many have you got right now?
Right now, we're still small, about five of us right now.
Five
people.
So you've gone from one to five. So tell me about that evolution, why you did it, how you did it, what were the problems, the mistakes, the failures, and how you ended up where you are now?
Yeah, of course. And you made a really good point. It's like giving up control, right? Because you start a business, it's all you. It's what you know. It's you're creating something in your own way, right? So I think the biggest piece here is finding people that have that similar energy to you, right? Because when you have that energy, that equals trust building. If you can trust someone and you get along with them, now you can start delegating to them more and kind of taking off your plate. And that was the biggest piece for me. You know, anyone that I hired, I felt a good connection with. I felt that energy. I felt that this is someone that I can build trust with. And, you know, that's kind of like how it spiraled. You know, you hire one person, then we were growing, we were getting busier because that person helped you get to point B, right? And now after that, we hired two more people. And one of them, after a few months, you can tell they weren't the person in the interview. And, you know, the biggest thing here when you're running your business, you gotta catch these things pretty quickly.
Yes.
And if you feel any type of, you know, something's not going the right way, have a conversation first, put it all on the table, be transparent. If things don't improve, you have to make a decision. Okay. Yeah. So I was in those scenarios, you know, a couple times on, you know, and then COVID hit. COVID shook things up a lot.
Absolutely.
One person who was doing really well actually ended up going in-house. She wanted to experience the internal side of recruiting. This was her first recruiting job. And I honestly was happy for her. I wanted her to explore that because, You know, I know
we're,
how
though,
it is.
Like, we 100% happy for it, because I've seen this. I've seen this so many times where I can think of two clients in particular where they took someone with zero recruiting experience, they trained them, they developed them, they nurtured them, and you know, got them to the point they're finally performing, they're productive, they're adding like to the value of the business, and then a large company comes along and offers them a much bigger salary and recruits them. And then they're gone. Like, so you go from having, say, four people, and now it's back to just one, two of you, right? And you're like, ah, and I've seen that happen so many times. So it's one of those setbacks, right? You talked about resilience earlier, where it feels like, in fact, I have a client who used to describe recruitment, like building a recruitment business, as, you know, three steps forward, two steps back, and five to the side. It's like, you know, but anyway, I interrupted.
Literally.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. But let's rewind a second to people not working out. So you gave an example, someone maybe three or so months in, and you didn't feel like things were going how they should be. First of all, what are you looking at to make that decision? And then second of all, what do you do to try and solve that?
Well, it's good when you have a few people, because you can compare activity from one person to another. So if I'm seeing, you know, one person consistently on the phone, setting up phone calls, scheduling interviews, et cetera, and I see another person not doing like maybe like half of the activity of the other person, now I can start seeing this little red flag appearing. And I'm like, what's going on? Why? You know, how can I help you too? You know, what are your challenges? You know, numerous conversations and still not seeing the improvement. And turns out when this person actually, when we cut ties, I actually saw the email, you know, history. I saw the LinkedIn messaging history. And I kid you not, I've seen so many emails that this person was receiving and not responding to. So that's crazy. I couldn't even believe this. This person had a real opportunity here to really kind of shine and, you know, and make money. I didn't understand.
They squandered it. Okay. Now, I'm really interested in your take on this, Brian, because that's the very sort of situation that causes a lot of small recruitment agency owners to go, oh, that's exactly what I thought would happen. I need to just go back to me. I can rely on myself. I can't rely on other people. You know, these clients and candidates didn't get responded to. That reflects badly on me. I just need to go back to being solo again. And they retreat, like they were close to kind of getting to that critical mass where you actually have something that's like beyond just you. And they have something like that happen, and they completely retreat from there. But you didn't interpret it that way, or at least you decided to keep going forward. So what was your thought process?
Yeah, keep going forward, because I've seen other people really shine and take it really seriously and thrive, right? So I've seen success and I've seen failure. So I think honestly, my suggestion is, if you're interviewing, say, like 10 people, right? And out of the 10, there's two people that you really, really like, and you're on the fence, you don't know what to do. My suggestion is hire both of them. Find Absolutely. A way to bring them both on at the same time, because if one of them doesn't work out, you still got a really good one, you know, in your corner. So that's
100%. Like I would agree with that. Absolutely. Because as you say, it doubles your chances of at least one of them working out, right? And you're going to, it doesn't take much more time to train and like onboard and coach two people than it does one, right? Especially if they start around the same time. So you're going to invest that time anyway. But if you do it with one person and they don't work out, then you've just lost all of that effort and time. But if you were two, then at least one of them, it's been beneficial. Also, it creates a little bit of friendly competition, right? They're both starting at the same time. And so, you know, there's going to be natural you know, they both want to like be the first one to get an interview set up or,
right.
you know, those milestones, there's a bit more of a buzz there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Makes total sense.
Healthy competition is really, it's really great. Even now, like, you know, nowadays I try to create as many like mini monthly challenges. So a personal goal and a team goal. So it creates that, and you know, and like the top producer that month will, for example, like if we hit a team goal, any restaurant, the top biller gets to choose the restaurant. So like these mini challenges, you know, make it fun, healthy competition, but at the same time, you know, the whole team wins. You win and the team wins. So you got to really kind of create it in a way that, you know, they're not getting, you know, it's not unhealthy. You got to really try to make it as healthy as possible, especially in the recruitment world.
Definitely. Yeah, exactly. I've seen examples of good competition and then toxic competition where people were undermining and backstabbing each other. That's not what we want, obviously, right? We want it to be fun and people like enjoy it and it's, you know, it uplifts performance. So as if all of this wasn't enough, you then decided you're going to start a tech company. What was your inspiration to do that? Because like running one business is hard enough, but now you've just created a whole new layer of complexity by now running two businesses, Brian. So why did you decide to do that?
Yeah. So at the time when this idea sparked, call me crazy, obviously, this idea sparked, we were really busy. We were doing high volume scheduling of interviewing. So, you know, and for me as a recruiter and my team, I've noticed that maybe over 70% of our time was administrative tasks, scheduling interviews. And I'm not talking about, Mark, the scheduling interview, like screen calls with candidates, the one-to-one. I'm talking about the coordination process, being the middle person, coordinating an interview between a client and a candidate. So I submit a resume. Now they want to meet my candidate. Now what? 90%+ of recruiters, including myself, we would do it the manual way. Hey, candidate. Hey, client. When are you free? Oh, I'm free tomorrow at 3:00. Oh, I can't do tomorrow at 3:00. Can they do next week? And you're going back and forth. And I've realized that scheduling an interview sometimes took days. And now multiply that by 30 interviews a week. You're spending so much time when you could be doing other things like sourcing, screening, submitting candidates to clients, you know?
Yeah, makes total sense. But then it's not an obvious leap to go, this is a pain in the ass. I don't like the logistics and the admin involved in scheduling interviews between clients and candidates. But you're like, I know, I'll start a tech platform that does that for me.
Yeah. So before I started Arrange, I did a lot of market research. I demoed a lot of different tools. I asked a lot of different recruiters out there, hey, do you know of a tool that does this? You know, you say scheduling tool, like, oh, try Calendly, for instance, just to give an example. And at the time I used Calendly and I'm like, no, that's not what I'm talking about. Calendly, a lot of these tools tend to ignore the middle person experience.
Exactly. They're between me and the candidate or me and the client, but not the client
correct.
And the candidate.
Correct, correct. So I'm like, wow, there's a big gap in our industry here. There's a pain point here. I got to do something about it. So I did a lot of thinking. I took a piece of paper and a pen and I just started scribbling my thoughts. And I'm like, you know what? I can either sit on this and maybe someone else will, you know, think about it and execute or whatnot. Or, you know, selfishly, I'm like, it would be really cool that if I use this internally at my recruiting firm, if I had something like this, wow, this would be really neat. So I, just like anything, Mark, I took another leap of faith in life. I teamed up with a development team and we created a whole plan of action and we brought the vision to life, and that's how Arrange was born. I'm really proud of what we built today, and I can obviously get into it more.
I guess the big question is, like, how long did that take, and how did you fund that? Because that sounds like building a new software tool from scratch can be pretty expensive.
Absolutely. Definitely is expensive. But when you believe in something so, so much, and the potential that's there in the long term, I'm always thinking about the long term. Like anything, it's not easy, but the long term game, I really am holding on to that. It's self-funded by me. I'm completely bootstrapping this. I don't have any outside investors. Is it expensive? Yes. But I believe in the long-term game, as I mentioned. It's also taking a lot of time from me, running a recruiting firm, and now I am building a recruitment tech startup. It's a lot of time, switching modes every single day, BSA to Arrange, BSA to Arrange. But I am giving each company and, business the time it needs on a daily basis. And I am delegating a lot more to my team and trusting them to handle a lot of the tasks that I was handling and running on the recruitment side. That is really helping me switch gears as much as possible to really get Arrange to where it needs to be.
Let's talk about this, Brian, because I do think it will interest our audience, but also selfishly, my current vision for my business is to make it less dependent on me. And we're making progress on that. And with my awesome team led by Lisa, our COO, and Rachel, our operations director, they're like freeing up more and more of my time. But how have you structured things in order that you can take whatever, like, I don't know if it's 50-50, but you can carve out a significant chunk of time when you're like working on your Arrange business and the other business continues to take care of itself? That's not easy to pull off. So what have you put in place in order to make sure that works?
One thing that changed my life, and I'll tell you right, that this is exactly what I did. And since I've been doing this, I've seen so much more success and ownership from my team. The biggest thing is having them involved in all the client calls. So for example, in the past, it would just be me on these intro calls talking. I would go back to my team. I would tell them, hey, this is what we need to do, blah, blah, blah. Now, if it's a new business call, it's all five of us on the call. They get to meet the client. They get to ask their own questions. They get to take their own notes, really get that personalized experience. So when we're going out there and recruiting, they have a really good understanding of who this person is and can sell the firm to the candidates in a lot more, seamless way versus me explaining things and not seeing it for themselves. And I've seen the ownership kick in. Now, every person on my team has client contact as well. So, and I've seen the success because when we're on these intake calls, they're not only getting me, they're getting a whole team behind them. So they're like, oh, wow, I worked with this other recruiter. We didn't see some success. But now they can kind of see like, hey, you have like five of us. And we do it in a very like, not overwhelming approach. It's very like, hey, we're an extension to your company. You have five people that are going to be working, every day for you, and building that rapport. And, honestly, since I've been doing that, BSA has kind of been running on autopilot since, I'm not really, the pressure, the client relationship pressure is kind of like off me in a way, because if something needs to be said, whatever, if someone's like, someone's candidate, go direct it to the client. You've met them. You know them. You can talk to them. So I'm really kind of like, and I can only do this because I trust my team. There's their energy connection that I really kind of, it took time to build this. And we're at the point now, everyone's kind of like operating like me now at this point. minus obviously the operations side of the, of BSA. You know, I'm really handling, you know, all the operations and whatnot, but they're really kind of doing completely, you know, 360 approach and handling, you know, from start to finish, candidate and client relationship. You know, sometimes, you know, there's placements being made and I'm not involved at all.
I love that. That's like nirvana, isn't it? That's
really, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's where I need this to be. I need BSA to be in this place right now so I can focus on Arrange, because that is, you know, something that I really, really believe in.
So it sounds like one of the keys was getting everybody on those client intake calls so they get the full briefing direct from the horse's mouth, so to speak. And then also they know the client and the client knows them. So then if there's communication, doesn't help, you're not the bottleneck. It doesn't all have to go through Brian. What have been, like, if there was a few more keys to making sure that the business can generate placements without you personally being involved, what else would you put on that list?
Yeah, it's the delegation, the trust is probably the biggest piece of this.
But okay, here's my question about that. Like, I get the trust, of course, and the delegation part, but what about ownership, like in terms of who is responsible for what and who do they go to for help if they need it? Like, I think, because if that's not clear, then people are lacking direction, right?
So I have a complete open door policy. I'm here for support, training, anything they need. So of course, on a daily basis, there's questions consistently of, hey, Brian, I'm dealing with this situation. How would you approach it, for example? And I'll stop what I'm doing. I don't care what I'm doing. As long as I'm not on like a call or anything, I will stop what I'm doing. I will either get on a quick video call and talk it through. This is what I would do. So they have consistent support from me, ongoing, whatever they need to get them to a place that, all right, well, I kind of know what, you know, what Brian would do and everything. And look, my way is not always the end all be all. I want to hear, like, hey, I always ask them back, like, well, before I talk, how would you approach?
What would you do? Tell exactly. Me, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What would you do? And then I kind of come in and chime in.
I agree with that part, Brian. I honestly think your open door policy is a mistake, to be completely honest. You can just about get away with it when you're five people, but then if you're 20 people, it doesn't scale, right? And so we have two different client groups, two different programs. One is for the solo producers and like really small firms, kind of like your size and below. And then we have a group for the folks who really want to scale. So they're like 5 to 25 employees and they want to get from like 7 figures to 8 figures. And if everyone is interrupting you all day and you're stopping what you're doing to help someone else, you don't get anything done, right? And so
that's true, yeah.
I'm not sure that scales, but you've got definitely the right idea by training people to solve the problem themselves. So if you always say, well, before I tell you what I think, what do you think we should do? Or if I wasn't here, if I was with a client or if I was on vacation, how would you approach this? And then they go, I think I'd do this. And you think, I think that's a good idea. Why don't you go ahead and do that, right?
Yeah.
And then you're kind of coaching them to be more self-sufficient and make their own decisions so they don't need to keep coming back to you over and over again.
Absolutely. There's some scenarios at times when, because we're in a team group chat, you know, daily, we're constantly, you know, talking to one another, any updates that need to be announced or whatnot. And if there are any scenarios like they need help or anything, there's times that I would ask someone else on the team, hey, you know this really well. Can you chime in and help? So like, I do delegate certain like questions and whatnot. But for the most part, if it's something really pressing and they come to me directly, yeah, I know it can be disruptive at times for sure. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, this is what I'm here for. You know, I feel like it's my duty and obligation to kind of help. Get my team better.
I get that. And for sure, it fits in with your whole ethos of why you're on recruiting. You like helping people, right? And you're, you know, and it's your business, it's your baby. You want it to, you want it to prosper and you want your team to thrive. So I completely get why you're approaching it that way. Any other keys to juggling two different businesses at the same time?
Don't forget to breathe. Don't forget to breathe. You know, it's the good thing is about, you know, Arrange is, you know, we're catering to recruiters, you know, so it's kind of like I didn't solve a problem for a completely different industry, right? So they kind of, there's transferable kind of synergy between both businesses. But you really got to, you know, wake up every day with those small goals in mind, right? And that kind of motivates you to kind of compete with yourself and like, all right, at the end of the day, all right, I did this, I did that. And you know, juggling both businesses, as crazy, as scary as it might sound, for me, it's exciting. You know, it's exhilarating. It's, you know, kind of like, I love multitasking. I love being busy. I love kind of, you know, building, forming new connections, discovering new things that I didn't know the day before, you know? So for me, it's kind of like boom, boom, boom. When I go to sleep every night, I am exhausted because I'm also chasing a toddler. Every time I have to take a break, I'm chasing a toddler. So
fantastic.
There's no calming down.
How old's your little one?
He's 16 months.
16 months, okay.
Yeah, and he is all over the place.
Absolutely.
He's exploring things. He'll come in my office, he'll jump on me, da-da, da-da. And I'm like, all right, I'm showing him actually like, I'm like, all right, this is a LinkedIn. You want to, what would you tell this for? And he has no idea what I'm talking about, but maybe one day he will.
Training him young. Excellent.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Well, look, I enjoyed our last conversation. So I'm glad this time we just hit record and so that other people can benefit from, you know, what you're learning and what you're doing. And, is there anything we haven't covered that you wanted to be sure to discuss today?
I'm going to leave with one my favorite quote, Mark, my favorite quote of all time. Don't let the sadness of your past, the fear of your future, ruin the happiness of your present. All we have is today, and make it the absolute best day. And that's what we need to live by, at least for myself.
Love that. Great. Thanks for sharing that quote, Brian. And I'm sure we'll speak again, but that's been a lot of fun. So have an awesome day and look forward to catching you soon.
Thank you so, so much, Mark. So grateful for this conversation and keep doing what you're doing. You're kicking butt, man. So really appreciate it. Kudos to you.
Thank you for listening to The Resilient Recruiter. I know how busy recruiters are, so I'm honored that you're investing this time with me each week. I don't take your attention for granted. That's why I'm going all out to deliver value for you here, real insights you can apply to improve your business. And if you really want to help me to reach a wider audience and impact more people, please consider leaving the show a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you leave me a review, please reach out and let me know so I can thank you personally. Please hit the subscribe button and I'll see you next time.